I mean, consider, I keep saying good considering everything that's going on.
Sure. It's
obviously a weird time, but I think like my life didn't change that dramatically because I work from home, and really the only, I mean, I'm not massively social. So like, I like going to the cinema, meeting with friends and like going out for meals with Charlotte and things, but that's not huge. And then, I mean, the rest of the time it's just the gym. That was like the biggest, but as soon as I started picking up pieces of kit, it was kind of like, well, now I've got an okay setup. I'm not stressed. It's kind of become the new normal. How about you?
Yeah, yeah. We are adapting like really fast to new circumstances, especially when they are not completely different. I mean, yeah, we can do our work from home, so that remains constant. And yeah, you basically can still do all the stuff you've done previously. So for me, nothing has really changed. I'm training at my friend's house in his basement.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I'm going every day. I'm walking over there, and it feels like you're going to the gym. So you're getting out of like your house and your room. And I mean, that helps psychological wise a lot to, not have to, don't have to be in the house all day. So yeah, that's really cool. And I mean, you planned on competing this year initially, right?
So I'd basically done like the diet before the contest prep. So I was very fortunate that when everything hit, it was kind of like, well, this is my maintenance period before the proper diet starts. So I didn't get into any like body fat where it was just like, I need to recover out of it or anything. So for me, I was very thankful that it actually landed at a good time. I'm gutted that there's no, well, the shows still say they're going ahead. Like organizations are trying to be very, like optimistic about it.
And
like
in finals. Germany, yeah, in Germany they are already starting to cancel the fall season. So
all qualifiers cancelled, but they've kept finals.
I got you.
I just, even if I don't know, I just think if like this season just feels like a wash, like for people's like mental sanity. I just think if you're thinking of competing this year and you're dieting down and you're like, oh, am I not, like, I don't know, it's just, it's not going to lead to the best finals possible, and I think that's what everyone wants, really.
Yeah, and I talked to Pascal recently. We had a podcast episode as well, but in German, and he also told me that he's canceling his first season just after 1 week of dieting. But I think that was like a really wise decision, and that's what I did with my clients as well. I had some guys who wanted to compete later in the fall, but we kept dieting a little bit, but now we canceled the season basically, and just probably go at it again in 2021.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kept thinking, like, oh, I'm in a good spot. I can maintain. I can make my decision a bit later. I was just like, but I don't want to just, like, we're bodybuilders, right? We only go through, like, we reluctantly do planned primer maintenance phases when we have to. We don't want to extend that period of time, really. And if we want to bring the ultimate goal is to bring your best physique to stage, well, the stage is always there. You're going to be better next year anyway if you don't kind of dig deeper and diet for no reason right now. So, like, hop on out, get into a gaining phase. And I just had to mentally shift that because I kind of got hooked on, oh, but it's been 3 years since my last stage presence. It's 2020. I was planning to do this. And it's like, I turned 30 this year. I wanted to compete for my, like, 30th. But yeah, it is what it is. It's just bodybuilding at the end of the day.
So you have been messing throughout the quarantine, so to speak?
So yeah, I finished my diet. When did I finish it? Like a good 3 months ago or something. I lost like the 20 pounds. I came from like around 200 pounds to 180 pounds within like just over 10 weeks. So it was actually very aggressive, very quick, very efficient. And went like, it actually couldn't have really gone any better. It went so well. I felt very good. And then I took basically a mesocycle worth of kind of, it was a higher volume mesocycle coupled with like just maintenance and then building my maintenance up. And then I decided to do just a low volume primer phase for a few weeks, which just finished last week, basically. Okay. And now I'm in a surplus. Now I'm gaining, and I'm like, this is true off season now. So yeah, I'm that's when I picked up the barbell and some plates and like a squat rack. I was like, perfect. I can do the primer phase really well timed. Like, I'm at home anyway. I can't do anything more and I don't need to. It's perfect time. And maybe everything will open up once I finish that. And then a month passes, nothing's opening up. In fact, I think we're at least 9 weeks until anything more opens up. So I precautionally purchased the lat pull down and the pulley system because I was just like, I've got the space. It was like £200, super cheap.
Yeah, now, I can see it in the background. It's looking good.
Yeah, it's actually crazy how little you need, like a barbell, some adjustable dumbbells, a pulley system. And I've already got like tons of variants and very good variants to do from home. It's just the big machines that you're missing, like the big hack squats and leg presses.
Yeah. My gym also opened yesterday and it seems pretty good so far. I mean, we all had like the fear that you could only work out for an hour. You had to wear a mask. You maybe had to queue in line before getting in. But hey, it just seems like everything is back to normal. And so I might be able to go to the gym again. But I'm still like chilling out a little bit, still training in the basement, and then maybe we incorporating stuff in the gym like over the time, because I just realized that I really don't need that much equipment. I mean, having machines and maybe some cables it's cool, but I mean, we did so well like with just a barbell, a bench, and that's the basics. And I might like incorporate a leg press or maybe like a lying leg curl machine, stuff like that. I think that's really valuable. But apart from that, I think we're really good so far. Okay. Something I also wanted to talk with you about is the Brett Schoenfeld's hypertrophy textbook. You were one of the lucky individuals who get their hands on it in advance. I think it will release sometime during June this year. And was there anything new for you, or was it like just a refreshment of your knowledge you had already?
So I'm going to disappoint you because I haven't had a chance to read it.
You were holding it like in your hand.
I know. That's literally the day I got it. I was just like, this is awesome that this has come. I have read, I wasn't sure what was updated in it, but he has it on his sale page and he has it right in the start of the book. And there is actually a lot of updated stuff in it. I think at least a quarter of it is like brand new stuff that was not in the old textbook. So I don't know yet, so I can't comment too much, but it's an unbelievable honor for Brad to have reached out and give, like, that was the, like, I was just like mind blown, like someone like Brad Schoenfeld, someone I respect like more than anyone within the industry, has decided to give me a copy of it. And yeah, I mean, I don't even know where I think I know where the other textbook is, but I read that. I couldn't even believe that one had been out already like 3 years. I couldn't believe that it was released so long ago. And that was great. It's just one of those books that's going to be a resource. So it's like, it's not something you read and you're just like, okay, that, like, it's all in my head now. I don't need to know anything else. It's like, you need to like go back there and check like, okay, what was this? What was this? If you need any kind of like, I don't know, you're doing an infographic or something, you need a reference because you kind of know it, but you want like the reference. Great book where you can just check that and be like, okay, yeah, Brad said, you can just reference his book, to be honest, because you don't need to find the studies because he's done that for you. So yeah, I'm very thankful for him to have done that because he's doing like fantastic work and research that we often like quote and use. And he's just collated all of that and expanded upon it within basically like a Bible for hypertrophy. So he's very, very like to the science. So that's like invaluable to have something like it is a true textbook in that sense. So yeah, I wish I could say I've read it and this is like my big takeaway. But, I just, from whenever I talk to Brad, I just respect the hell out of him in terms of like, he's very honest about, this is what the science says. I can't say anything more to that. And maybe he'll expand to his own experience. He's very comfortable in like talking dividing the line, whereas I find a lot of people are like, they say a lot of things as potentially fact when it's not been looked up. It's not, there's no evidence. It's just their opinion or their anecdotes. Brad's very good at being like, no, this is what actually has been researched. We have good evidence about this. This is what I found maybe, and maybe you can look into that, but this is much more like the strength of evidence is far higher here. So yep. I respect him a lot for that.
Yeah, same. And I, yeah, just recently started writing scientific articles a couple of days ago, because I've always been the guy who wrote Instagram posts, and I think they're valuable, but I don't think you really get the props for writing those. I mean, not many people really read through, and those who do, I mean, yeah, you're not giving always credits to the guys who do the studies and stuff. So yeah, I just wanted to expand my my level of content, and therefore start writing with scientific references. Yeah, that's it. So so I read through a lot of Brett Schoenfeld studies, and they're really, really good. And he's like the main guy in our field who does the most of stuff which we're holding on to when we give out recommendations. So yeah, really looking forward to the book, and kind of excited. So Steve, this is your second appearance on the podcast. You've been here in episode 5. Back then we talked about the different phases an athlete could run through over the course of a macro cycle. And since then I had Dr. Eric Helms, Brian Miner, and Dr. Mike Isotel on the podcast as well. So a pretty good lineup so far. You're back here again now, and one thing which is maybe not that well known or proven by the scientific literature is the body fat settling range. You just made an pretty good Instagram post about that topic, and I think that's really interesting because there's not really much data about that. It's more like a concept. Which just basically makes sense that we have a specific range in which our body is feeling good and it's performing well relative to our just daily tasks. So in our situation, hypertrophy training, of course. So and we have the range for some people that might be wider, and for some a little bit more narrow, but a question which always comes to my mind is how far should one take their either massing or cutting phases? Should we when we approach a mass phase, push our body weights up about previous higher ends, or should we always stay in a specific range? And for dieting, I mean, it's often old only seen as a tool for further massing, because I mean, in between season your main objective is to build as much muscle as possible, but it may be a good thing to potentiate your contest prep. And we know dieting is a skill, so we might profit from getting a little bit more used to maybe lower body fat levels. So what's your opinion on that? Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more about like the concept itself, and then we'll pick it up from there.
Cool. I mean, really great question, because I find it to be a really cool concept, and which is why I spoke about it. But I was very certain to make sure that I said this is just it's not a known fact. This isn't a thing that we can be you definitely have a body fat settling range where you feel good. This is definitely a thing. It's more so through kind of observational studies and through our own kind of client work and through just living ourselves as beings. It seems that is definitely something to it, and just it makes sense from a biological point of view, in that we have homeostasis, which is where the body loves to be, just maintaining. And then as we draw further away from homeostasis, we're getting more and more upset, essentially, as our body is like, no, fuck you. I don't want to lose any more fat, or I don't want to gain any more muscle. And so it makes sense that it's trying to draw us back to this point where maybe there's a range a bit above it, a bit below it, where we feel quite good. And then too far from there, we start seeing negative things happen to our health and to our well-being. So I think it has a lot of, like, it just makes sense from just an understanding of biology. But again, like you said, we don't know it's a thing. But I like it because as a coach, it gives you some like practical parameters in terms of, like you said, cutting and gaining. It gives us kind of this range where it's like, well, this is where our body performs its best in the gym. Performance is the number one thing that's going to create muscle growth, which as a bodybuilder is our number one aim. Even when we're trying to drop fat, we're still trying to train for muscle growth. So we want to kind of stay in this productive zone as much as possible. And like you said, it might be quite a wide range for some people. It might be a narrow range for others. I've definitely seen that myself with different individuals. And I think we have a stronger pull, certainly, when we start getting below the lower end rather than the higher end. In terms of biology, again, that makes sense. Being kind of overweight and like fatter, the biological mechanisms to stop us gaining weight just aren't as strong as losing weight, because that's kind of more acutely cause some harm. And in the past, we were always like hunter-gatherers and food was more spare. So it wasn't something that we were too concerned about overeating, because it just wasn't a thing when we were like hunter-gatherers in that regard. So maybe that will change in future and we're better ones than leptin and things like this to stop us gaining so far. But in terms of your question, I kind of alluded to it in terms of cutting. I'm pretty damn like strict with this with my own clients, where if they are not kind of cutting for a photo shoot or for a show, don't get to the point where the diet truly starts to bite and it just sucks. So this is where I would say you're getting below your lower end settling range point, where you just, you're not feeling too great at that stage, where like libido is starting to severely drop off. You're thinking about food more than you are like the opposite sex or the same sex, depending on whoever, whatever way you are inclined. Your energy levels are just far worse. You're waking up maybe a bit groggy, a bit tired. Your sleep is potentially starting to take a hit as well. And you just are more food focused than typical, more hungry. And it's just an effort. Anyone who has competed, who's listened to this, or anyone who has dieted down is like, yeah, I know that point, that it, maybe it's a body weight they associate with, and that might change over time. But oftentimes we see it as a body weight that's just hard to get below, because it's just the body is like, nah, you're going to slow down. Everything's going to slow down. You might see even biomarkers in terms of like resting heart rate might suddenly just like drop like 2, 3, 4, 5 beats. It's like, whoa, I used to be like 50 beats per minute. Now I'm going to like 45 rapidly, because the body's just trying to downregulate, stop burning energy as much as it was before and get efficient. So I don't think there's any point getting below that low end range unless you're competing or doing a photo shoot.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's like the main difference between an extended cut and a contest prep, that the things you achieve are sustainable or not. Like in a regular diet, hey, you really want to like want to be able to sit at that body weight for an extended amount of time. You don't want to bounce back up, because the time you invested to get down there will be wasted. Like, so yeah, you really have to be careful when attempting a longer diet. So yeah, you have to make sure like you're staying like in a range where you can just stick to that body fat level afterwards. But I think there are really a lot of things which can influence like the range we have, either up and down. Of course, like psychology is something which is like really, really strong. And I mean, we can't really incorporate that in our talk, because, yeah, I mean, everyone's psychology is kind of different. But if you're talking yourself like into staying leaner, and you're like idolizing maybe athletes or people who have that lower body fat, I mean, yeah, this will definitely have an influence on where you will be comfortable sitting, also physiological wise. So and also like the life circumstances, and I think habits are also a really, really big point, especially regarding activity and nutrition. for myself, I've experienced that since I've been like really into this bodybuilding thing, and I've had the phasic structure of bulking up, going back down. I've realized that over the years, like my body fat settling range, so to speak, always tends to be a little lower, and I'm getting a little more used to like lower body fat percentages on average. Mm-hmm. But I think acute changes in activity and nutrition can have like really, really big impacts on where you're comfortable sitting.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because this was like so long ago, I remember reading about this concept of like body fat set point. I think it was from Body Recomposition on Lyle McDonald's website. And he went into some of the models. Like, I've taught body fat settling range as like a body fat percentage that you feel good in, and it's a range of high and low. But there's like body fat set point, body fat settling point, and then like we're combining lots of different like ideas. And I think in the research, if someone was to look them up, they might be a bit different. But like you said, there's so many things that impact this, like your psychology. Mm-hmm. Where have you been in the past? What's your history like? That's going to impact how things are. Your environment. If you've just like changed jobs, you've gone from being, I don't know, a desk job, or maybe even, this is a good example because there might be people doing this, like they're a PT on the floor 10 hours a day, and they're doing all their clients. Maybe they do a couple of spin classes like each week, and now they're an online coach and they're just sat behind their computer. Or even you used to walk like, well, I don't know, you used to walk to the shops, you used to walk to town, you used to walk to the gym and back, and now you're in lockdown. And you're not allowed outside. Your step count may have reduced massively, so that non-energy activity thermogenesis now just completely crashed down, and that's going to potentially impact where you feel comfortable, because you're not just going to suddenly walk around your flat like doing 10,000 steps. It's just unlikely. So your environment as well, from a like social perspective. I know I've got clients, and you probably have as well, where I don't know, they might not be so into their fitness, or maybe even got someone's partner, they're just not into like this lifestyle. Uh-huh. They enjoy going out drinking and like eating lots of good food, like a lot of people do, and it's not so important to have their physique on point, and that's going to influence it. You actually quite often see it, at least in the UK. People go to university and two things either happen. They either go to university, and because it's like they're in control of their own food, they eat like nothing because it's like they don't want to expend the money on that. Uh-huh. Or they put on a ton of weight because they go out boozing and have a takeaway, and they get into our fuck it mode, and they just consume all of it. And so, yeah, people either, like, your environment can impact it. So like you said, loads of things can impact this. And I think it's why something, when you talk to someone about like how they feel about like truly be honest with yourself, because I've been there where I've tried and I have sustained a very lean physique, probably 10%, maybe sub 10% body fat, where like I had striations and things like this. And it's just unnecessary. I didn't feel my best. I know my libido wasn't as good. And it's not until I started actually pushing my weight up where I was like, wow, this is how good I can feel if I just let my body fat come up a bit. I eat plenty of food. And you mentioned before, is there like, should you ever push up like to your upper end? And I think a lot of people might think, why would you? Because like, if you can be productive lower, why would you ever push beyond or into that range? But I think is, Alberto Nunez actually alluded to on our recent podcast, and I was actually interested to hear him say this because I hadn't heard him say it before. He always traditionally stayed very lean, apart from in his earlier days. He was like, now and then I think if an advanced trainee wants to really get that muscle growth, maybe they need to push to a point of uncomfortableness, just like we have to get uncomfortable to get super lean, maybe to get like more muscular than we're meant to be. Maybe we do need to push to that high end of body fat. And I certainly did it in my last off season, where I got to a point where I was just like, I feel like not great. And I think you don't want to extend that and make it really bad, but maybe you get to the upper end and you do this maintenance phase and you kind of hold that body weight, and maybe slowly you kind of feel a bit better there as well. And hopefully you hold on to some of that muscle tissue a bit better. Like, people have talked about hardening phases. Again, this is something, a term I got from Lyle McDonald on his website. And he was talking about it in terms of like the enhanced bodybuilders, but maybe there's something to it for natural bodybuilders as well, where they can push up to these higher levels of body fat, but also more muscularity, and they hold on to this muscle a little bit better. Whereas if they diet and they just keep missing that. And we get very kind of comfortable with being in this lean zone where we're eating plenty and we look pretty good, and we get a bit discomfort, like we don't want to go to those higher body fats ever again. But I think it does pay off. But again, it's, yeah, some people I think will find it where if they do push that height, they might find it hard to come back down, and they need to get comfortable with the lower end, whereas some people need to get maybe comfortable with the higher end. I'm not sure. It's just interesting to talk it through.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, yeah, there are a lot of individual differences, but yeah, pushing your weight up for the sake of maximum hypertrophy is definitely not a bad idea. And that's what I also aim for with clients who have the intent of building as much muscle as possible. It's like we're getting into a massing phase and we push like the boundaries of the previous one a little bit, and we do a diet, go back down, and the next massing phase we're approaching, we want to get like a little bit higher. And what I'm experiencing is that every time you're pushing up, you will just look leaner at the same body weight as in the previous massing phase. And I mean, that makes it like a little bit easier. I think if you're getting into it and you're doing your first bulk, you're just not seeing like the results initially when you're bulking. So getting like some references over time is like really valuable and gives you a lot of guidance in that sense. But I mean, something which can hold you back in order to push even further is of course your body fat. You will just probably feel a little bit miserable and you will not be happy with your current look. But what I'm also experiencing is that a lot of athletes, especially advanced athletes, just struggle to get in sufficient calories to maintain that surplus. And in that case, we have like different variables we can manipulate to make further massing possible. And that's of course our activity and our nutrition, so we can manipulate those. And if like further massing is a problem, pulling activity levels a little bit down may be an option. What do you think?
Yeah, again, it's a good question, and it's something that I never thought I'd get to. I remember back in 2000, and I think it was 2016, actually, the first time Mike Israetel came over for a seminar, and there was like 30 of us in there, and now there's hundreds of people, which is crazy to think about. And that would have just been this last weekend, so it's kind of on
looking
my mind.
Looking forward to next year.
Yeah, 2021, it's going to be good. I'm gutted about that, and I'm sorry for anyone listening who has also not been able to make that. But I remember him talking about this peanut butter scale. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a scale of like, how delicious is peanut butter? Is it revolting to you, or is it absolutely gold dust, or is it somewhere in the middle? And he was like, when you're really deep in a cut and you're like, maybe you're below that body fat like settling point range at the end, like peanut butter is like, oh my gosh, it's the nicest thing in the world. Whereas when you're at that peak mass, you look at peanut butter and you're just like, you feel sick. And I can remember him saying that. I'll be like, I've never not liked peanut butter. I'm never going to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until my past off season where I said, I purposely did, as you said, like I pushed my body weight up, I creeped up, I cut back down a mini cut. I got up there and I got up to this 200 pounds twice in that previous off season. And yeah, it was a struggle to get there. And I got slightly past it as well. And that was where peanut butter truly, I didn't even want things like chewing gum in my mouth. I just didn't want anything. Like it was just like anything that like had calories. I was just like, no, keep it away from me. Mm. And I moved towards more liquid calories. I was having mass gainer shakes. I was having fruit juices, more processed food to keep my fiber down. And basically a lot of the anti-hunger strategies that you would incorporate when you're dieting, you flip them on their head. So you're looking for, in terms of calorie per bite foods, typically you want low calorie per bite foods in a diet. You want high calorie per bite foods. You don't want liquid calories in a diet. You want liquid calories when you're at that peak mass. Yeah. You want high fiber when you're in a diet. You want low fiber once you're getting up into those peak mass ranges. You want low palatability foods. You want high palatability foods. you want low variation in terms of like foods, because that makes it easier to like eat less, because you're not like, oh, I need to have this, mm-hmm. try this flavor, whatever it might be. You just have, okay, all I've got is rice. I don't have rice, bread, potato. And then when you're in a mass, you want every kind of color under the rainbow. You want to mix foods, sweet and salty, whatever you can do to make it easier to get the calories in. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you basically, and it's just interesting to like think that's like there's a bit of a pendulum, and I think either extreme is not great. Mm-hmm. And that's again when you know you're at these either points. If you're having mm-hmm. to use every single anti-hunger strategy under the sun to keep mm-hmm. going or keep that maintain that body fat level, that's not a sustainable level for you. And if you're having to force feed and have fruit juices and mass gainers and you're struggling, you feel kind of nauseous a lot of the time, like you've got to that point, you probably don't want to push there for too long if you are doing that. It can be really hard. And
yeah,
I'm actually it like people get frightened to cut, and like you in some weird way, bodybuilders are kind of like driven to enjoy the severeness of the suck. Mm-hmm. But in the same instance, it's kind of like, oh, I really don't look forward to going for a walk and like almost fainting because I've got low blood sugar levels and I just like feel like crap. In the same instance, now I'm in my mass gaining phase, I'm like, I really hope that I actually don't get to that point where I'm having to use mass gainers and drink juices and do all those things. And I would say one thing I learned from that experience is I think I may have had slightly worse a time going there because I transitioned too far away from the basics of a wholesome diet. Mm-hmm. So I think whilst my fiber was still okay, it was like 30 grams of fiber. I was on like 700, I think I was on 700 grams of carbs. 30 grams of fiber to 700 grams of carbs isn't many. Mm-hmm. So I think I too much let my food get more highly processed. I too much went for the mass gainers and I let some of the wholesomeness of the diet go. And I think that actually ended up making my life harder. I think I maybe, and I don't know enough about this subject to be able to talk about it too much, I may have messed around with that. So I had not the best gut microbiome. And so it just got upset and I felt nauseous a lot of the time and unwell, because I even visited like the doctor. I visited my GP twice. I was going to get a scan. I was going to get a tube down my throat to like look at my gut. But I had a consultation with Gabrielle and she looked through my diet. We talked through things and that's what she thought. And basically, as soon as I started, this was at the end. And so as soon as I started dieting into my first, like, that'd be like 6 months ago now, it basically went after 2 weeks. Like the first start of that diet was like, oh my God, this is so nice eating less food. Mm-hmm. And now I haven't had any issues with that for a long time. But yeah, you can, how a lot of people have experienced the horribleness of that low end of a diet, I think the same is true up at the other end potentially. And I think you can cause yourself some problems at both ends if you push it too far for too long.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting how we alter our habits depending on which phase we are currently in. And yeah, pretty cool concept in that sense is like the hedonic staircase of dieting. Yeah. I mean, you already mentioned that, but you have like a staircase, and at the top of the staircase, you have like stuff like maybe olive oil or peanut butter, and on the bottom end, you have like, I don't know, lettuce or shirataki noodles, oh, you know, yeah, like the noodles with zero calories, probably something like that. And yeah, it's always like good to reflect on where you're on that scale, of course, in average. I mean, having some ice cream even here and there if you're dieting and it fits your total calories, why not? So don't look at a meal just in isolation, but more in context of your whole diet. I think that's a really good concept to remember. And food selection has been like a topic which has been like not held up so high in the past, because yeah, we basically know everything is like down to macros and getting in some fiber foods and veggies here and there, of course. But I mean, sometimes we might get the impression that food selection doesn't matter, but it definitely does. Especially regarding our body fat settling range where we are at, because I mean, I can sustain a much higher body weight only if my food selection varies a lot, and if I would just stick to like the foods I'm eating during dieting, hey, I would have a struggle pushing up that body weight, and that would give me the impression that my body fat settling range might be a lot lower, but that's only like relevant in context to your habits, so to speak.
I just to speak to that hedonic staircase, I got to, like, it's crazy to think over the course of, I was at 202 pounds and you couldn't like pay me to eat a slice of cheesecake. Like, I cheesecake is delicious. Like, right now I could eat cheesecake for sure. But then I was just like, I prefer just not eat any food. But over the course of, what was it, like 3 months, I got down 20 pounds. And at that point, a carrot was tasty. The hedonic staircase is like, I was right down that staircase in a quick amount of time. So it's, it's a really good concept. And very, very true. And food composition absolutely matters, because if you were only eating cheesecake and you're like, oh, this is like the cornerstone of my diet, you're never going to get shredded.
Nope.
It's just not going to provide you the satiety and all the things we need from our food.
Yeah, so there might be a little bit more to food selection, just apart from like macros and calories. Yes. So, and I want to dig a little bit more into like dieting phases. I mean, we covered messing phases really well, but I already mentioned earlier that, dieting phases are more likely to be seen as a tool to potentiate a further messing phase. But hey, if our goal is to compete in the near future, maybe in 2021 or 2022, might it just be a good idea to maybe stick to the lower end of a settling range for an extended period of time? And do you think, I mean, that will be highly speculative, that we can change that settling range if we are sticking a longer time to it? Or is that something which will be, fixed? So, that's like kind of interesting. I mean, I'm planning to compete like either next year or 2022. And I'm
very cool.
Yeah. And I'm, I don't know. I did my last contest prep in 2018, and a lot of time has passed since then. And I'm just questioning myself a little bit. I mean, about how lean I can really get, as I've been like in messing mode like for the last 2 years. So, I mean, just challenging the lower end of my settling range, maybe once every year or so, or just from time to time, might not be the baddest idea. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting, and I don't think we know yet. I think there has been some research looking at like heavily obese individuals and looking back at them in like certain periods of time. And the thing I've heard about is how if you have been heavily obese in the past, you do have this kind of shadow following you for life, where you have to be careful. You can't just go willy-nilly and like intuitively eat, for example, because your body will intuitively pack that weight back on. So I definitely think there is something to like you're having an anchoring point somewhat, and maybe I don't know when that's set, and I don't know how strong it is versus like environmental factors, because I know for me, like when I've initially got down just recently to 180 pounds, it wasn't like the most comfortable thing, but after being there for a month, I was like, oh, now this is livable. Whereas I don't know if maybe that was 170 pounds and that would be almost stage ready. I don't think I'd ever settle and feel comfortable there. But I'm someone who's always been on the leaner side, so pushing higher has always been a struggle for me. And it's a case of, are we risking by pushing up to the higher end, holding there, and trying to like go beyond, are we now risking anchoring our settling point higher? So now getting lean is more difficult. And I can definitely see the rationale behind it. And I think it's a case of, well, if your higher end is like unreasonably high, then probably don't push to that point. So for me, like my high end point was probably the high, like teen body fat. I was probably around 20% body fat or something. I think if you're much beyond that, like 25, 30, like now you're getting into really like unhealthy, like truly unhealthy body fat levels. Your BMI is probably in a really bad place. imagine health markers aren't looking too sharp. So I think you have to take that into consideration as well. I think maybe a lot of the listeners are more similar to us and where our range is a bit more in a healthy zone. And so I think we're probably okay to utilize that. But it's definitely something to have to think about, because I don't know what point you have to push to where you are starting to gain new fat cells. And then once you've got a fat cell, like the story is, you can't get rid of the fat cell. It just shrinks or gets larger. And that means if the more you've got, the more risk there is for gaining it, the more there is to lose. So it's always going to make life a bit more tricky. I definitely think if you can get to a lower end that is somewhat comfortable and you can extend your period of time there, I think you can make that much more livable and much more comfortable. And that is why I like getting people lean, like where you can see a fair bit of muscle separation, maybe a small amount of striation in some of their leaner muscles, and then holding that, trying to drop the diet fatigue that got them to that point. And maybe that'll take a month, maybe it'll take 2 months. It depends on the person. But even after a month, you're going to have at least relieved a lot. And now your journey to stage lean, and that journey is effectively, and me and Pascal have talked about it, that going below your lower end settling point, you're kind of on fire in this period of time. Like, you can do whatever you like, you're still burning to death. You don't want to extend your period of time. You kind of want to get in there and then get out as soon as possible. So I think if you can hold above that kind of burning point, so where the diet is starting to get hard, maybe you have to use some diet habits still to stay under control, but it's somewhat sustainable for the time you need it to be. I think you can then dig down. So I do, and I am a fan of, if people can plan backwards from shows, like just roughly, I think that's always a nice thing to do. Because if you can, take a block of fat off, then hold it, and then go again, you're just basically like a car on a journey, like you're refueling, and the chances are you get to your end destination are just so much greater, and you're definitely going to get there in better shape. You're not going to have to make any weird decisions or like try and refuel in some odd way. So yeah, I think, hopefully that answered the question. I'm not sure it did.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's like really valuable to check out where your lower end of the settling range may lie, and that gives you also really good information for like the contest prep, which may happen in the future. And that's what I do with a lot of clients who are coming to me in advance, and they say, "Hey, I want to do a competition, maybe in the next couple of years." Of course, we are focusing like on like building the package, of course, but also I want to make sure, hey, they are in a position where they can get really lean, and maybe doing like a diet in advance where you push to the point where the diet is like slowly starting to get a little bit more hard. Good just to check out where you can go and incorporate that in your pre-planning of the contest prep. So that's maybe something I'll do as well in the near future, to just see where I'm at, so to speak. And having also reevaluating your situation under maintenance calories, I think also really important, because when you're dieting down, I mean, an acute deficit never feels really good. I mean, you're just seeing what you can have in that situation. Friends come over, they eat pizza, you eat rice. So it's like not like most of the time, not the coolest thing to be in social wise. But what I experience is that like the last weeks of the diet, they feel kind of hard, but then you're incorporating the maintenance calories, and just after 1 week, you feel like you have never been dieting. So, we are just evaluating your diet fatigue under high isocaloric conditions, like, is also, I think, really important, because during the deficit, you will, you just won't feel your best, but afterwards, you can really see how you are dealing with the body fat levels and the diet fatigue.
Just on that point, Cliff brought it up on a podcast. He used a great analogy of like, how do you know how close you are to like stage ready and what your stage weight is going to be? And he kind of talked about, well, this analogy of you've got a blindfold on and you're in a car park and you need to get to a point in the car park, which is like at the other end of the car park. So you've kind of like, okay, maybe I have like 50 steps to get there, and you walk 20 steps and then you take the blindfold off. You're like, well, I thought I should have 30, but now I can tell I only have 20 steps. So then you walk maybe 10 steps and then you take the blindfold off. You're like, I thought I'd be 10 steps away, but I have another 10 steps to go. You walk mm-hmm. like 5 steps and you're like, okay, I thought I'd be 5 steps away, but now I'm 2 steps away mm-hmm. every time. And then the closer you get to that end like goal, you can be more precise with where you need to take it. And something like I talked about, I kind of took that first diet phase. I got to 180 pounds. I realized, wow, I don't have as many steps to go as I thought I did to get stage mm-hmm. lean now. I thought maybe I had another 15 pounds, but it was more like 5 to 10 pounds. I think probably 10 pounds, but maybe I'm a bit harsh on myself. But it was great to do that experience. And like you said, if you can take clients, especially ones who want to compete in future, down to a certain body weight, body fat percentage, you get an idea of what their physique and package that they're going to bring to stages, if it's like to their taste and to their liking yet. But you also get to assess, okay, like how much more would we need to take off to get to stage? And can we sustain this level of leanness? And if we can, then awesome. We can plan that in next time we look to compete. I think that in itself, like, I think that can be like, you can practice that first phase of prep, like maybe once every 2 years or something after you've mm-hmm. ran your mini cuts and you've kind of used those up.
Yeah. It's super crazy. I mean, the time frames are so huge, and every time you're getting there, you get a new opportunity to do things better. And yeah, I think that talk could help out a lot of people in that sense. If you haven't checked out the episode 5, I think, yeah, that's a good place to start. But now you already listen to us talking, but that would be like a good introduction. And now we dove a little bit deeper in how far you should take your massing and cutting phases apart from competition. So hey, Steve, thank you for coming on. I think that was a really cool discussion. And yeah, at the end of each episode, you know, we put a song on this on the playlist.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, sure.
I have time for one more thing?
Of course.
Do I? Cool. It was just, as we've been talking through it, it's just given me like a new, I love talking through it with people that understand this sort of thing. And it's just given me a new like macro perspective of what I do as a coach and how that might be valuable to others, and where the body fat setting range kind of, I think it can play really helpful for us. And I was just thinking, like, in terms of concepts, in like an off season, say someone's just competed, maybe they're in this kind of fire zone below body fat settling range. They recover up quickly in maybe 1 to 2 months to the lower end setting range, hold there, rid all the fatigue that they've built up as much as possible. And then they're traveling up to the higher end. And within here, maybe they're dropping in some mini cuts to resensitize, lower training volume, burn off a bit of fat, extend this period of time as much as possible, just like kind of like MEV to MRV, right? Mm-hmm. So you're doing this as much as you can to spend as much time growing in MAV. So this is maximal, maybe we call it maximal adaptive like fat range or something. I don't know. Needs to be a concept. And you then travel up to the top and maybe hold there for a period of time. You're at MRV. And then maybe you're traveling all the way down in an extended diet phase, because a mini cut's not going to get you there, to the lower end again, and then maintain. And then you can either choose, now I'm going to dig and go into shows, or I'm going to build my way back up and do these mini cut travels again until I get to the high end again. And then I'm going to do the same journey. I just think that's it. Like, since we talked through it, it gives gives a physique competitor a framework of, okay, this is where I want to spend most of my time, and like where I want to get to and move between. So yeah, I just, as we were talking, it was coming to my mind. I was like, oh, that sounds quite cool. I want to share that.
Hey, thank you so much for mentioning that. I think that's really great and applicable for the individual, also in a practical sense. So yeah, I think that's a really cool concept. Hey, thank you so much for that. So last time you gave us a song from Eminem, like Toy Soldiers. And you mentioned that you're not like into music that much, but hey, maybe during the quarantine, you've started to listen to maybe a little bit more songs. So
it's really funny because I haven't. People have been asking me because I've been uploading videos and I've been playing, like, because I'm at home, so I've been playing music through my phone and it records it whilst I'm doing it. And they've been asking me for the song, and I'm like, I don't know the song because I use Spotify and I use the playlist Drum and Bass 2020 and it just plays through songs. So I actually couldn't name any of the songs there, which is really unfortunate. One I was just listening to, I think, was Prodigy, but I can't remember the name of the song. It might have been like War something. I don't know if you can even find that, but something Drum and Bass. And I'll probably like it if it's got a beat.
Is it The Prodigy?
The Prodigy, yes.
The Prodigy, yeah, it's a really popular band. I mean, they have like a lot of cool stuff, but do you know the exact song? Or
I think it began with a W.
With a W. I mean, I think one of their most popular songs is, do you know Smack My Bitch Up?
Yes.
Smack My Bitch Up.
Let's go and smack my bitch up.
Okay. I think that's cool. Yeah, we're going with that. The Prodigy, Smack My Bitch Up. It's a classic song, man.
I need to get my music literacy up. I'm terrible.
No. You're a robot. You don't need music. Okay, so, yeah, as I would love to have been to travel to London last weekend, I couldn't make it, but... I think most people didn't know, but I lived in the UK for like a year when I was like 1 or 2 years old. And after that, my mom sent me to like private English lessons. And yeah, I've had it in school, but yeah, I'm really thankful for having to be having the opportunity to improve this skill, so I'm able to communicate with you somehow. Like, I know my English is not the best, but yeah, in the past I've been practicing it a lot. Also in the younger years, and I like I've always been a fan of the Liverpool Football Club.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and a cool song which. I haven't heard in years is You Never Walk Alone.
Oh yeah,
yeah, you know that probably. So yeah, I've just found that on Spotify and it's a cool version. So I'm just gonna go with that and yeah, awesome. Yeah.
You're makes... do you know Jess, our intern?
Yeah, yeah.
She supports Liverpool, so she'll be a big fan.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Since 2005, I'm a fan. Back then, they played against AC Milan in the Champions League, and they were 3-0 behind at halftime. And then they turned things around, and they went to a penalty shootout and won. And since then, I'm
awesome.
Yeah, big fan. So, You Never Walk Alone is the track I'm gonna put on this playlist. And yeah, hey, Steve. Can't wait for the London seminar to happen again next year. Is there anything you can maybe give us or any information regarding and maybe another seminar? Usually you've done like two or maybe three cinemas in the last year. So is there anything coming up?
So, yeah, unfortunately... we actually wanted to reschedule this seminar to maybe even later this year. But at the moment, I mean, I don't know. There's travel restrictions, quarantines. Mm-hmm. If people had to, they travel over here, stay in quarantine for 2 weeks or something at the moment. Yeah. So at the moment, unfortunately, no like live in-person seminars are being kind of planned out. We will look absolutely to make it bigger and better next year for sure. I am really sad because the seminars... not just great to see the guys and see Mike Israetel, who like I've had over every single year, but to connect with people like yourself, Lewis, and maybe some of the listeners, it's always just overwhelming to see that many people at an event that we're kind of running. So
yeah.
I want to thank people for supporting us as always in that regard. And I would only say we're trying to hopefully fill the void a little bit through the internet and with our members site, in which we do have courses live over there. So we're putting up new courses every week, whether or not that's a researcher like Brandon Roberts, he's done a lot for us. We have some coming from Jackson Pios, he's doing some diet break ones for us. We have some actually cool like bodybuilding athlete monitoring from Jake Reed. That was really great. And then the coaches are also doing theirs. So maybe in the meantime, if people are looking for, they're craving that education and that chat, and maybe even the forum, people can get over to the members site. That's the plug I would give, I think.
Awesome, man. I'm going to link that in the description. So I'm always referring to your Instagram and to the Revive Stronger website as well. Perfect. And there you can check out the member site. So hey, guys, thanks for listening, and see you soon in the future. I mean, these English episodes are something where I have to get like out of my comfort zone a little bit. I mean, I would prefer to talk about those topics in German, of course, but it was a lot of fun. So yeah, I'll just see you whenever another talk with an English guest is when it's a good time. But I'm planning on to bring a lot of great guys back on here, same as in the past. So see you soon, and thanks for listening. Thank Amazing. You, Steve.
Yeah, thank Bye-bye. You so much for having me. And your awesome. English is much improved.
Yeah, really,
it's very good. Yeah, okay. And it's an honor to be on, and you did a fantastic job of being the host of the podcast. I get nervous doing podcasts, and I've done them for years, and I'm English. So you did a great job.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for listening.
Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.